Recording.
How do I make it?
Hi, Heather. Can you hear me all right? Oops, I can't hear you because you're muted.
Okay, thanks for the update. I'll see you soon. Bye. That was Steve. He's on his way.
How's it, Leo?
So Lisa can't make it. Yeah. Can't make it.
I know.
So if we have one, Molly also comes to have a forum.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. You're good.
Oh, Andy.
Hello.
Hey, Molly. Hey, Molly.
Hey. That's just so baby. So baby, and we're back.
Have fun.
I know.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was sitting on bikes over, and then got into the garage, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, it was such a weird day, too, because it was like, I was a torrential downpour, and then I was like, sending the music all the time. And then,
yeah,
it was the torrential downpour. So you guys, we realized the packet kind of somehow got screwed up at the last minute. We were working on it last minute, as you know. So we have some corrected, I'll say more formally, but just to clarify. So for the item number 7, it just kind of got very, the staff report got cut off, and then some of the attachments got cut off.
Okay.
So sorry about that. So obviously we wanted to have a chance to read it all, so we'll, just leave it open and you guys can send us any other comments after the fact.
Okay.
There he is.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you.
So I think we actually, we only have 6 members currently, so 3 of 6 is a quorum, I think. How does that work when you have an even number? Is 50% considered a quorum?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we know if Andy is coming?
He's probably way late by the rain because he usually bikes and buses.
That's right. Yeah.
I think I should email it to him.
We'll have to do carpooling sometime.
Yeah, I should have offered him a ride. I really should have bought that was facility. I should have picked him up from the terminal.
Oh, from the tanker mall?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to reach for it. My schedule gets so screwy today.
Would anybody want some water? You can get your left water from your son. Are you good? We do have, there he is. I see him on his bike. Awesome. Yeah. I'd be happy to see if anybody would like a cup of tea. I'd be also happy to see up some water for tea. Anybody like tea?
I'm a tea person.
Oh, yeah. caffeine or decaf? We have some lemon ginger and some rooibos, and some, trying to think what other non-caffeinated teas we have. So it's like then we've got green tea and black tea as well. Your preference?
Hello, Andy. Welcome.
Hey, Andy.
Sorry.
No problem. Do you need some dry clothes?
Green if you got it.
Green? I have green, but it's not decaf.
Okay.
Do you want lemon ginger or
lemon
ginger? Okay. Steve, would you like lemon ginger or rooibos?
Is it me?
A lemon ginger or rooibos tea?
Okay, that's nice though. Yeah.
And would you like some hot tea?
Yes,
please. Is
that
a dinner okay? That's perfect. Thank you.
Hello. Andy, how are you doing? Good. How are you? Good.
Did you
bike
from the transit center?
From Davis.
Oh, all the way from Davis. Yeah. I was going to say that next time we could coordinate and I could pick you up from the transit station or something or meet you. I was gonna bike too, but I only live like 8 minutes I drive away from here, but
the
lazy decision for us to drive.
I thought the rain was done, and then I was trying to
everybody else.
I could literally, as I was getting my bike sort of out and getting up, my kids and my lights were working. My husband was like, "It might rain," and I was like, "No, the weather doesn't stay rain." He's like, "That's what I said earlier when it was in the rain anyway." So
yeah, trying to. I could see that dark cloud coming. I was trying to outrun it. I got into a little bit of this.
I had to play some tennis this morning between the rain. We had to pause twice between 9 and 10:30 or
something. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I saw that crazy downpour. And then it was so strange because the water just was so short. It just dried up and there was like no rain, no record of the rain. Like it was like as if it hadn't happened.
It was so dry, and we were so dumb. This is interesting. Eventually, my name will get corrected. My first name was actually a CH, and has never got fixed. It's not your fault. It's kind of a carryover. So you can make it. It was carried over from Kathy before.
You should have said something. It's like when people call me Amber and I don't
say that. Yeah. I show up at court to begin
this
team and I'm going to see
them. What's that called? My name is Alan. Yeah, Alan. I'm like, hey, I'm sure you have to tell me. Yeah. They sound
the same.
Just exactly. They spell the Y and I'm like, you know, it's fun when people do it on email when you like, see my email signature in my email.
Right,
still
use the right button.
It's okay. It's
allowed.
Follow.
It's just food.
We
have
somebody patiently waiting to talk to
her. Oh, okay. I think we should get a move on. The tea. I will just pop out and grab the tea once the water is boiled. Did everybody get some of these last
year? Yes.
Yeah.
I think I have it again.
Okay.
Is anyone else having them? Yes.
So no, we don't have anybody, I'm not sure who's the
baby.
A baby tree staying home. Oh, okay, great. It's just a staff. Just a staff person. It's one of our wonderful staff.
She's a musician that we just got tonight.
It's the same. When you attend it, it's the same thing. Yeah. But it's just the attachment, the staff report attachment version of 7 was screwed up, so that's what you have printed in front of you. It's just a correct staff report and attachment. So apologies about that. But yes, whenever you're ready.
Call the meeting of the Physician Advisory Committee at order. And do a roll call, please, Stephanie.
Oliva?
Here.
Molly, we have to. Okay. I'm sorry. City of Portland, let's try that.
I'm not going to hear them.
City of West Sacramento? City of Washington? City of Davis.
Here.
And Director at Large.
Here.
And we should, everybody use your mindset. We are recording.
Here.
Just remember to press the button here. So the light turns on behind the screen.
So, are there any comments from the public? Looks like we may have someone on the line there.
We do not have comments from the public at this time.
Oh.
We just have staff.
Oh, okay. One of those staff is on there. In other words, you're seeing Alan all the time.
I believe Mr. Hirsch is the Woodland, Winter City Council tonight.
Oh, okay. So we can move on to approval of the minutes. I noticed your last name changed a few times in there on Brillo.
Yeah. Let's see, it's F-U-R-I-L-L-O. I haven't said it. had a chance to take a close look, but,
One thing I wanted to, comment on or appreciate is the DHC members items. I don't know if others went through that, but again, appreciate the board of directors offering that option. Oh, and the other thing, Patrick Gill talked about the YCD providing transportation assistance to maybe get some members here. And for those that are new, that actually was done from about July 2017 until January 2020 for Nathan and I to get here. They send a fair transit bus to Davis. So that's been done before when you use five. Especially somebody with wheelchair or walker who needs that kind of support. Any other comments or changes on the minutes? Is there a motion to approve them with any revisions that we can let her know about later?
Right.
Okay.
Second.
Moved by Molly, second by Andrew. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, let's move on to the next item.
Sure, I'm happy to go first, and then we also have CAC member reports as well on this on the item.
Okay.
So, would you like me to start, or would you like the CAC member reports first?
We might as well go in order. I was focusing on the administrative part, but are there any members that have something to, that they would like to share?
So a couple of updates from the Davis commissions and committees. So I did attend the Unitrans Advisory Committee meeting as an alternate, and they're still their alternate representative. The regular representative couldn't make it, and we approved the annual service changes for Unitrans. I mean, generally pretty minor things, like just made a couple of schedule adjustments so that there'd be less conflict between buses going through the UC Davis campus during passing periods to get to the silo terminal, just like little tweaks in the schedule, and then also swap to get an off-building swap the schedules of a couple of the lines actually that overlap with the 42, the Z line and the A line that run along Fifth Street. Could have been the Z line went to Memorial Union and the A line went to the silo, but then they swapped those because the Z line is a bit shorter. And the A line also is important, and that's the one line that serves the area the 42 used to in South Davis. And that one will now go to Memorial Union rather than silo, with the Z line going to silo. That's the update on Unitrans. Also, from the last BTSSC, Bicycling Transportation Street Safety Commission meeting, a couple items we discussed, the plan for a new overpass or underpass at the train station to get between Olive Drive and downtown. And as there was some spirited discussion about which option was preferred between the overpass and the underpass on that. And then also, we recommended the City Council approve the Vision Zero plan for Davis, which has been on the consent calendar tonight. I know there have been some changes to their agenda tonight to talk about some of the statins that have been going on. So I'm not sure if they're still doing the consent calendar or not, but I know it has been scheduled for tonight. But those are my updates. Thank you.
I'd love to clarify something. What was Unitrans going to do? Because I know they had expanded shuttle service for UC Davis students. And what was Unitrans also doing in the extra?
For
relating to the consent, security consent.
I don't know of anything. I know the state ride service that had been moved to start earlier at 8 p.m. I think that normally didn't start until after Unitrans ends for the night, more like 10 or so, but yep. To my knowledge, there haven't been any changes here to Unitrans service.
Great. Andy, what was the conclusion of the discussion of tunnel versus overcrossing at the train station?
Oh, there, has, That hasn't been there. I mean, we didn't wind up making it, but it's still early in the process because they don't have the cost estimates for the underpass versus the overpass aren't out. But I think there are a lot of concerns. I mean, a lot of like the people who live right around there and like purely as an oldie statement prefer the underpass. Mm-hmm. So they're worried about like, the overpass. But right, it's still like quite early in the process.
The safety issues were brought up about the underpass.
Yeah, and that was part of the discussion too. People, and there were concerns about, I mean, there were some folks that definitely preferred the overpass because of the safety issue, and also just like the way the bike path would be designed, would be kind of an obvious kind of a, like this to get into the underpass from the train station, while the overpass would be like a more, but then the overpass, I think, would hit some of the local residents, it sounds like concerns about the...
It's going to take more right-of-way?
Yeah, and the, just the vision, and just some of the stuff about, like, views and stuff like that, but it's still, like, so early, I think, the cost estimates aren't that. We didn't make a recommendation, like, either way yet, so...
I imagine that the overpass would be preferred to the underpass just for safety, partly.
Yeah, that's definitely how plenty of people felt.
Going underneath and crying at night time would feel a little frightening. I'm familiar with that because the Lincoln 40 apartment project on Olive Drive is paying for the major share of that. They're calling it wider on Olive. So
it's
a wonderful facility. It's more like a resort for students than typical apartments.
Appreciate it. You're sending Brian in your place to the Yellow Check meeting last week, and he makes an excellent observations and points, and was a useful member right away. And so thank you.
Glad to hear.
And then the CAC is missing some members, and so if any of you are interested in applying for a position on the Yolo CAC Technical Advisory Committee, I know it would be appreciated. This is the county.
Mm-hmm.
So, something to think about.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have anything more to share?
Okay.
Just one comment. I got a pen on Sunday. There was an event at the Veterans Memorial High School parking lot with Touch a Truck. And it was wonderful to have the Yolo bus. It was Fernando Corona remembering their thank you for giving us specifically some of the fundraisers and it goes toward Henry's corner to Central Park. And what was Henry's response? Was he all over the place honking horns?
He had a great time.
Yeah, several people were asking, is this going to be an annual event? And I think it'll probably be for at least several years. Okay, let's move on to your items.
You bet. Okay, so for my video director's report, I want to share a couple of things. A few things on the agenda, and I apologize, I was on vacation last week, and so things were a little bit hectic with getting the agenda done and then the packet, so apologies that, you only got the agenda on Friday and then the packet yesterday, and there were some errors with the packet. We were just doing the best we could, but the timing wasn't great. So one thing, the zero emission bus plan, which this committee talked about at your last meeting, we now have a complete draft of it that was listed on the agenda as one of your agenda items. However, in the interest of time, because we have some other fairly major other items on the agenda tonight, we put that in the administrative report section so that it's still here and you can ask any questions about it and members of the public could comment on it, and we welcome your comments on that. That is going to go to the board for approval, not at this next meeting, but at the subsequent meeting in June. So the board's going to hear a brief presentation on it in the next week's board meeting, but not approve it until June. So if there are any comments or questions about the plan, please send us those comments via email, and we'll make sure to either pass on your comments to the board and answer any questions that you may have. And Courtney and I just today met with Mitch White from Valley Clean Energy to talk about ways that we might be able to partner to help achieve a lot of the infrastructure changes that would be needed in order to transition to a zero emission fleet. And we're going to be asking for their kind of feedback as well on the plan over the next month before it's adopted. So I just wanted to flag that. And then also, as I mentioned, agenda item 7, which was around the microtransit policies and a service plan for Woodland, some of the staff report got was shortened but accidentally, and also one of the attachments was as well. So we've included those in your packet, or sorry, we've printed corrected copies, and we'll send out corrected copies. Welcome your feedback and comments tonight, but recognizing that you haven't had a chance to review everything because it was not complete, would welcome any comments or questions that you have after the fact as well on those. So again, really apologize for that.
On one thing, on the page 13 of the, which would be the zero emission bus rollout plan, it stated that the June 2023 board meeting, it sounded like it was already happening. I think the one change was to will be.
Thank you. Yeah, this is kind of that's language that sort of has to be in there, but it's sort of assuming that the board will approve it.
Yeah.
So you're right. So we should put a sort of caveat around that until it's actually pretty.
I'm learning some new acronyms: ICT, innovative, clean transit, and some other things.
Yeah. Thank you for that comment. Any other comments or questions on that at this time? If not, I've got a few other things tonight that you are future for. Okay. A few other things. Just yesterday, we got the great news that we were awarded a $3 million grant from the Sacramento Area Council. Well, I should say, staff is recommending it. It still needs to go to the Transportation Committee and then board for approval. But staff is recommending that we be awarded $3 million from the most recent funding round for our tolling advanced planning work. This is the work that we're doing in collaboration with SACOG and other Caltrans departments across the region to establish essentially a tolling authority for the Sacramento region so that we can implement express lanes on 80, but then also we're trying to design it in such a way that it would be allowed for the rest of the region as additional express lanes come online as is envisioned in the kind of regional transportation plan for the region, that those other facilities would be able to join our tolling authority. So it's great news. If we hadn't got that funding, we frankly weren't sure how we were going to be able to do all the technical work that was and studies that are needed to implement tolling on this corridor. So the fact that we've been awarded those funds means that we should be able to kind of move forward with all of that planning and technical analysis. So it's great news. Steve, you mentioned the community event last weekend, the Touch a Truck. There were actually four different events that we were participating in last weekend. It was the Bike Rodeo in West Sacramento. Patrick, who's not able to be here tonight, sent us a great photo of his son who had a great time at the Bike Rodeo. We were there with one of our vehicles demonstrating how to use our bike racks. We were also at the California Deaf Days event. We had two buses giving that were with a docent giving tours of the Yolo Bypass. And that was a big success. And as well, there was a Touch a Truck event at the Woodland Library, the Reed Rumble and Rev on Saturday. So we were at all of those events this weekend. A really great kind of opportunity to kind of showcase the Yolo bus. And you had a number of people who came up to me and said, I've never been on a bus before. Neither has my kid. So it was great to get some people to get some exposure. Couple more things. On the Yolo 80 project, Caltrans has now said that they are going to release the draft EIR for the construction of the project in late June. So we're going to be bringing that to you in July. And Citizens Advisory Committee we and Caltrans will be able to present kind of a summary of some of the key findings of the EIR and having an opportunity for the public as well as you to kind of ask any questions or offer any comments. As well, we are scheduled to come to the DTSSC, I believe, in May, I think it's actually this month, to give an initial presentation and then potentially return, I think, again after the EIR is released. So stay tuned for more information on that. And then lastly, on the CAC.
Is the plan still to have two, basically add one lane and take two away from the free flow?
It's just going to be to add one lane that would be a toll lane. It's a preferred alternative at this time. We are still talking with Caltrans about also converting one of the general purpose lanes to a toll lane, but that's not going to be part of the current EIR.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. I think it's a smart move.
Okay, great.
Did that go counter to YCTD's recommendation? Or how did that go?
So there was a lot. There's been a lot.
So, Kentor, can you ask the question again?
Sure. I'm just curious about how that resolved, how it resolved itself, because at one point, I think a couple of months ago, you had said that the YCTD recommendation was to have two protected lanes, essentially, if you want to call it that, and then two free-flow lanes, which concerned me because, in my experience, to take something away from the that people are used to is just a problem.
So, I mean, there was just a lot of back and forth and conversations with kind of our board committee and Caltrans District 3 and Caltrans headquarters. We were kind of meeting monthly for about a year, and then kind of the end result was that we all sort of agreed to right now just pursue the one additional lane, the new lane, and then to revisit the idea of converting a general purpose lane down the road.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's smart.
Okay.
I guess I'm going to clarify my question on that. So, for that general purpose thing, it doesn't need to go over the causeway. Would the toll lane go over the causeway or would it end before?
Yeah, the first phase of the project is from Richards Boulevard in Davis to the 8050 split north side.
So it is over the
It's a conversion of the inside shoulder for that entire distance.
Okay.
Yeah.
One more clarifying question on that. So is the preferred, so you mentioned the person the preferred option, is it a high occupancy toll lane that would also be open to like 50 carpools and three carpools or like untold carpools and then single drive and then single occupant drivers there, or is everybody fit?
Yeah, the exact kind of tolling configuration is still to be determined as far as like, but yes, it would be some combination of carpools either are free or pay a discounted toll, depending on occupancy, and then single occupant vehicles would pay the full toll. I think that's, those are all the kinds of things that in our clean air vehicles exempt, et cetera. Those are some of the policy decisions that would have to be made, you know, prior to implementation. None of that has been determined at this point.
Thank you. I do have a call to the Richards Boulevard renovation. Is that going to be accomplished before I-80 expansion?
I believe that project is fully funded and environmentally cleared at this point, if I'm not mistaken. That's the City of Davis project, so I don't know exactly, but I believe so.
I don't know, but tell me about the project.
Yeah, I haven't found out. I'm sure Brian could get this information.
Idea of if Richards would be what, Steve?
I thought it was on track to happen the next year or two,
but I think it's redesigning the whole area.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's like I'm not a super expert on that process, but I think it's a mix of like if they want to redo, like I think they want to convert it right now as like kind of a clover leaf. I think they want to change it to more of like a diamond, like the configuration of the ramps, and they also want to put in a bike path.
Yeah, improve bike path for sure.
Okay.
Last thing I promise, which is on the CAC member stipends, you know, as noted, the board did approve those. You know, Heather sent a couple of emails about where there is a required ethics training that the CAC members have to. Apparently, once we start offering stipends, then it's mandatory that you have to do the ethics training. I don't know why, but that is what our lawyers are telling us. So Heather has sent some information about that. And once you've completed ethics training and you're eligible to start receiving the stipend, you of course don't have to take the stipend, but you are welcome to it. Also, the other thing that the board approved was creating some additional at-large seats, particularly to add diversity to the board, to the committee. Heather and Chris are working together to put together kind of a recruitment package, if you will, of materials and applications for people to apply and some recruitment materials that we'll share with you. I would love your help in recruiting new members to the committee. So stay tuned for more details on that. And that's everything I have.
Madam, if you don't want to start them, then are you still required to do the ethics training?
That's a good question. I think it's never a bad thing. Put it that way.
Is it the same ethics that other public?
It's AB 1234 or something like that, and it's an online video that you can do. Yes, I mean you probably, since you serve on other bodies, which I know you do, you probably have already done it.
I haven't done it the most recent one, and I hope maybe I can still do that one.
I think it's all the same.
Okay.
Yeah, if you do it for one board that you serve on, then you get you've done it for all of them.
Alright.
Yeah.
Some of the questions on it that I just finished up recently, heading to the Planning Commission, both Louise Baker and I are serving, I'll soon be not serving in the Planning Commission, but it's interesting to read some scenarios for Planning Commission for the focus of the ethics issues.
Oh, I see.
Maybe compromising on some land use issues with some pay on the side, that sort of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah. If anybody's getting kicked back from transfer, then you can refuse yourself.
Okay, well, we're moving on. Preliminary budget. That's,
So I'm going to kick us off on that, and then Leo Levinson, who's also here with us via Zoom, is going to join in as well. So we actually, we don't have slides for this one, so we just wanted to share that sort of the draft of the budget is in your packet, this has been item 6. And I just wanted to highlight a couple of the key changes in terms of major changes to the budget, and then Leo's going to talk to you a little bit that kind of the long-term financial outlook for YCC, because as we all know, it's kind of those of you that follow kind of transit policy, you know, broader transit policy, know that there's a lot of agencies that are approaching a fiscal cliff. And we're not as close to that cliff as other agencies, but it's certainly looming in the down the road. So we want to talk a little bit about that. So in terms of what's in the budget, there's a handful of changes to transit service that I wanted to highlight. One is increasing frequency from Route 42 AD to 30-minute headways all day. So as some of you may recall, this was the original recommendation in YOLO-GO, and then the board modified that recommendation to have it be just 30-minute headways during peak hours with 45 minutes the rest of the day in order to kind of, like, see how it went. And what we've seen is, you know, there's been a pretty, you know, sharp increase in ridership since we implemented those changes, and so based on a conversation we had with the board where we reported back on how it's going with the 42, we are suggesting that we do go ahead and move that to 30 minutes all the headway. The budget also proposes restoring express bus service to South Davis, from South Davis to downtown Sacramento based on some of the feedback that we heard from both the rerouting of the 42 and the elimination of the South Davis Express, that, you know, bringing that back would mean that there's once again YOLO bus service on the south side of 80 in Davis. And then restoring evening service in West Sacramento. This is some evening service that was cut during the pandemic, and we have heard from riders that, you know, they would like to see some of those evening trips restored. So those are the three major changes to transit service that we're proposing in this budget. And as well, we can continue to work on the National AV project, and that obviously that $3 million from State College is going to help a lot with that. And then on the capital project.
Will YCCD leave that study for the entire region, just for
for tolling?
Yeah.
We are leaving that because we have the project timeline that is looming. But we are doing it collaboratively with our partners at State Cog as well as Sacramento Plaster and all that.
Okay, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
YCCD was selected, and all the other counties are okay with that.
Well, I mean, we were not so much selected as, you know, because we're the ones who are actually trying to do tolling. We have to assess tolling.
Okay, of course.
And so, but rather than just do it for our own county, we thought let's take a regional approach and work with our regional partners to try to do it in a regional way rather than just as a single county.
Very good. Do you get any kickback from members of State College board members who don't like the idea of tolling in their county?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about kickbacks, like the other kickbacks we were talking about. There was a State College board meeting to discuss it. And there was some pushback from one or two members of the State College Board.
That's a better word.
Yes, they've expressed some concern, but so far State College is continuing to move forward.
Okay, and the pushback, I presume, is about.
Can we get through the budget and maybe come back to this?
Sure.
Okay. I want to make sure this is a really important item, and I want to make sure we get your feedback and comments on the budget.
Okay.
We can talk more about your
location. Let's go.
Okay. So we also have the launch of the microtransit service in Woodlands. Capital project that's in there is the Downtown Woodland Transit Center. So we are, the board's the last meeting did move ahead with a planning study, an additional funding for a planning study to identify a new transit center, an on-street transit center in Downtown Woodland to get us out of the county fair mall, which is our current transit center in Woodland. And so we've included funds in this year's capital budget for actually implementing that change. And with that, I'm
going to
hand it over to Leo to talk a little bit about the kind of financial forecast.
Yeah, thank you, Autumn. I wanted to leave plenty of time for questions rather than going through the document sort of table by table. But I thought it was worth looking at the last table that's in your package, which I think is on page 53 of the overall package, which is the table 3, the 5-year outlook in constant 2023 dollars. Economic speak for taking out the factor of inflation.
Hey, Leo, can you share that on your screen? Because I don't know that everybody has that in front of them.
I'm disabled screen sharing, but can Heather, can you enable it?
Yeah.
I still got it disabled. But I'm sorry. I was assuming there would be copies of the packet, but I guess not. We're paperless.
That's not money.
It's not money?
Yeah, not while the meeting is in session.
Can you share?
Well, I can do a little speaking to it. Let me see if I can draw a picture with words, and I do apologize for this. But so our overall budget, just looking at the operating budget, leaving aside the capital and planning budget, is approximately $20 million. It's about $19.6 million. And in the proposed 23-24 budget, we are proposing to use about $4 million of non-continuing funds. These are we're really trying to draw down the special stimulus funds that the federal government provided in response to the COVID pandemic and the economic downturn. And so we have two major kinds of those funds that we're using, something called ARPA and CARES Act. They're really two flavors that we can use very flexibly, and those funds don't require a local match. Unlike our formula funds that we get every year from the federal government. So we wanted to look at what happens with really two factors moving forward in the budget. One is the loss of those 100% very flexible funds. And the second is making sure we looked at the cost of annualizing the service increases that we're planning in 23-24, because we're including 6 months of some of the increased service that Autumn mentioned. And so looking forward, if you move that service out to 12-month period, it adds about $1.4 million to the budget. And we'll be losing about $4 million of the diminishing federal dollars. We'll have about $3 million actually more left that we can use one more budget year, in 24-25 of the CARES Act money. And then we predict we'll have pretty much exhausted it after that. And so together that ends up with, in future years, having about $6.3 million that we need to find other sources for compared to how we're doing next year's budget. So we wanted to look at what was possible, what did that imply. And so the first thing that we would do is we do believe that we'll have enough of the usual formula funds that provide a 50% reimbursement rather than the 100% reimbursement to backfill for a portion of that. And that could end up backfilling for about $2 million. Of that ongoing $6 million shortfall. We have a couple of competitive grants that are expiring. That's also part of our shortfall, but we do expect there to be future competitive grants available. So we're just assuming that we will be able to backfill that with other competitive federal grants. So that's leaving us with about $3.5 million on an ongoing basis. So for that, and that's actually, this will solve for 24-25, those first items, except for about 2.25, and then ongoing about 3.5. So we have built up some unrestricted fund balance in prior years, partly because of service reductions during the pandemic, when our revenues didn't go down, we were helped out in various ways, but we didn't have to spend as much of our local money. And even prior to that, we had built up some unrestricted fund balance. So we estimate we have a little over $8 million that will not necessarily be restored, but that that we have available. So if we were to, what we're looking at in the 5-year forecast is, what if we were to use about?
Yeah, you know, can you zoom that in a little, Heather?
Yeah. Oh, are you? Oh, you've got it now. Yeah.
So let's pause for a second and see if we can make this big enough. Okay. Right now, it's not really legible.
Yeah.
This is not in our package, right?
It is in your packet.
It is.
It's page 53 of your packet. So if you have a printed copy of the packet, it is in there. But for those who didn't print it, apologies. I don't know what that helps. Okay. You can't get it any bigger than that. Just want to go to my
PC. Are you sure so looking at sort of the second line above the bolded subtotal potential strategies. Those last two strategies. The first one is use of fund balance. So with about $2.25 million out of our $8 million, it looks like we would be able to balance the next fiscal year, all things being equal. And then we're saying, well, what does it look like if we sort of temper that down and use $2.25 million in the next year, and then down to $1 million the following year, and then none in the last year of this 5-year scenario? That would use up about $5.5 million out of the $8.4 million. So not necessarily using all of our extra available fund balance. And so that would leave the final line, which would be the gap we'd have to find other sources. And some of the funding strategies that we talk about, we do actually have additional State Transportation Development Act Local Transportation Fund, the LTF, is provided by the state for transit purposes, but in areas like ours, it can also be used in local jurisdictions for streets and roads, a portion of it. And so right now, about $9 million of those funds are not being used for transit. This looks at what it would take to sort of ramp up to backfill that gap, which could be from those funds. And as we mentioned in the text of the budget, there are some other things happening as well that may provide funding sources in the future. Right now, there is a campaign by a number of transit agencies across the state to try to look for more funds in the state budget to backfill for the disappearing federal funds. And so there are other transit agencies that are much, much worse, more constrained fiscal shape than we are, such as the Bay Area, BART, and Muni, and Los Angeles, that have billions of dollars of shortfalls coming up. They are lobbying hard in the state, and if there is a change in state formulas, likely that would mean that we would get an extra share as well. And so that may relieve some of these constraints. And then in the longer-term future, there's the possibility of toll revenues if and when that tolling district comes into play. We have other strategies available as well. So this is really just one scenario for showing how the service that we've proposed could be sustainable in the future.
Excuse me, Molly, I have a question for you.
Yeah, I guess I was just curious, the timeline for, you know, if changes were made to the FTA, where would that start impacting this budget? Would it be, what can they change? Is it, are there some that have done that are still up on the table, or just was curious about the timing?
I don't know, Autumn, have you been more involved in the politics? I have not been closely involved, and we're letting the other big agencies sort of carry the water on this.
Meaning the big lobbying push at the state level.
Yeah.
I don't know enough. Yeah. I haven't been as involved either.
I talked to Michael Pimentel with the California Transit Association about this, but I haven't been following the details.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I mean, there's something that there's interest in a lot of different things, but I know one thing we've been pushed forward using is this making TIRPP, which is the Transit Intercity Rail Capital Program, and making funding from that eligible for operations rather than capital. I know that's the thing a lot of the agencies have. I know that's something there's a lot of interest in. And then, of course, you have the general, like, TDA reform also, something there's been a lot of talk about, especially in making it so that right now, it's like in the more highly populated counties that LTS is required to be used for transit, and then as was mentioned, in the less lightly populated counties like Yolo can be used for roads instead of transit, but dedicating all of that to transit is also something that's definitely talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to recognize that, you know, if we use all of our LTS for transit, which is what it's supposed to be for our transport, we wouldn't have a funding gap. Because it's a $3.5 million federal gap, funding gap ongoing that is Leo is forecasting, and we have $9 million in TDA that currently is used for streets and roads in Yolo County. So we could easily use that and there'd still be money left over for local streets and roads, which is not as much as there is currently.
Our other deficit that I should mention is our capital deficit, in the sense that our fleet has been aging and we haven't been replacing it at the rate at which it's been aging, and that's essentially. And we'll have a major program as we figure out our zero-emission fleet plan to acquire those vehicles. In this budget, because our fleet is aging so fast, we are proposing to replace two CNG buses with new CNG buses because we simply don't have the charging infrastructure or being ready to replace them with zero-emission buses at this point. And so this budget does also try to deal with that sort of aging depreciation deficit as well in that way. But we will need funds in the future, either grant funds or local match, for that effort to make sure we keep our fleet operating.
So, Cordy just handed out everybody copies of this table. So if you wanted to just highlight the kind of the key numbers you were talking through, now everyone has it in front of them.
Yeah, I think what I spoke to were the main ones. The others are really simplifying assumptions. They're not meant to be predictions because it really keeps our other main revenues constant. Of course, they won't be constant. This does show, however, the magnitude of some of our revenues. For example, fare revenue is about $1 million of our budget. There's been various initiatives to hope to make the system free more broadly than it is now. We have done our free fares for youth, which has done a lot. But so that shows the kind of magnitude we would need to replace if there were an effort to do that. And then the other major thing that would add to our deficit is if our base revenues didn't rise at the same rate as our costs. Again, this for simplification, just assumes inflation in both revenues and expenditures at the same rate.
I have a question about the cash creep mitigation fund. I see it going through 5 cycles. That's a yearly thing on into the future?
That's a great thing to focus on. It is something that is requires further work. Autumn, I don't know if you want to speak to it, but it was set up at the time when the casino was being developed, that there's an obligation by the tribe to mitigate the impacts of that casino. That obligation does not have an end date, but it needs to be renegotiated because basically events have changed since the original time. And so we have a very good working relationship, and they continue to pay us and we continue to invoice them. But we really do need to negotiate a new agreement, and that's an interesting question as to whether it would be the same magnitude or whether it would change. But this assumes that it's basically the magnitude they have been providing to us.
Go ahead, do you have a question?
I had a question on those cash creek funds. I know a year or two ago that there was, if I recall correctly, there was like a cut in funding from the tribe, and that led to service on the line 215 being reduced. Is that cash creek mitigation fund, or is that a different funding source from the tribe?
It sort of started before I came, but my understanding is that the causality went the other direction, that during COVID there was a reduction in service, and we also, and so It was negotiated that we would reduce their contribution given the reduction in service. And there certainly is room if we were increasing service to talk to them about increasing their contribution. But what we really need is the formula has sort of gotten away from the original way of doing things. And so we really want to, it would be very good to formalize it.
So in practice, they're paying us for is exactly how much service we operate, which is different than what's actually in the agreement. The original agreement was a flat dollar amount. But in practice, we say, here's how much service we're running. And, you know, when we have, service has come back from how low it was at the beginning of the pandemic. And we sort of monitor demand as do they. And there was an article in the Daily Democrat a few months ago about people not being able to get a seat on the bus for certain shifts when there's like shift changes, for example. So, you know, we are in communication with them about kind of what, how the service is going and what, if any, kind of changes are needed as far as increasing or decreasing the number of buses. And so that's really what that's, because it's the overwhelming majority of people using that service are their employees. And they provide discounted, kind of cards for their employees to use the service. And it's actually one of our most efficient routes. I think it is our most efficient route in terms of just the sheer number of people riding every trip. The buses are full, but not standing room full. They're full, but the most part people are seated.
Going back, you talked about the going to a zero emission fleet. And someone help me out here. Federal government just issued a dictum that all trucks and buses must be zero emission by 2035.
This is the California Air Resources Board.
Okay. Now I thought the feds also had a something out on that. And so let's just say it's the state for the time being. What kind of efforts or what kind of planning is going into transitioning to that? If you don't start at some time, I mean, some of the buses need replacement now. Some of the CNG buses need replacement now. I get that. But if you're going to spend money rehabbing old buses, which eventually, or buying new CNG buses, which aren't going to be able to be used in 2035, how will that start? Wouldn't it make sense that they have some kind of a plan in place to phase in electric buses or fuel cell or whatever by 2035? Otherwise, you're going to have a fleet of buses which just get thrown in the garbage.
So we are working on that effort. I mean, and that's the fact, that's the draft that you have under the administrative reports, the draft zero emission bus rollout plan. That we are bringing to the board for approval in June, and that does kind of lay out some of those timelines for when we do plan to be 100% electric by 2035. So, again, go ahead, please.
Yeah, so I know we didn't touch on it, but the plan covers the replacement schedule for our buses. It explains the current fleet of buses we have.
Okay.
So we currently have this battery electric that we operate for Paris on the 138 Causeway Connection Service. We also have diesel MCIs, and we have CNG buses. And within this plan, it explains that when their useful life occurs, and in addition to when we plan to start procuring zero-emission buses. So we actually forecast to meet our goal. The ITC ruling is 2040. We project to meet that by 2035. And this plan will answer a lot of, I think, your questions in regards to at least how are we thinking about it, where are the next steps. Financially, that's a different story. We are going to be talking about that, but I guess for this meeting, this document will provide you with a lot more insight into what we're planning.
Can you just summarize that?
So this was at the last CIC meeting, which I think you were unable to attend.
Right.
We had a conversation about that. So I think we do have a lot of items to get through on the agenda tonight. So if we can stay on the wrap up the budget conversation and maybe come back to this.
Okay. That's
right. Okay. Were there other questions or comments on the budget?
Go ahead.
Thank you. I think it's still at the spring here, the 42 is going to 30 minutes. Correct. The plan is for that to go to 30 minutes all day. One question, so Susan, if it's probably a good time to discuss that, or maybe even, I mean, discuss what we're maybe putting on the longer range calendar, because sadly, King season ended this last weekend. But hopefully we'll be back strong next year with a lot of people going to their games. And I know that for the latter part of the season, the 42 has gone to that J Ice Street routing pretty consistently, like during the game. But I'd be curious, and again, it could be something we talk about now, or maybe it's better suited for like a long-range calendar for tying into that 30-minute service to get the most out of that and get a lot of people hopefully on transit going to those games like next season. Like just the plan for the downtown service pattern during events there, and whether maybe what we can do to advocate for a consistent route to where we can still serve stops right by the arena during games.
I know this has been a subject of much conversation with SACRT and the city of West Sacramento. It's ultimately the city of West Sacramento, I believe, that you know makes the decision about when they close the streets and who's allowed to use the streets. I know Daisy is listening in, but I hate to put her on the spot. If she wants to jump in, she's welcome to do so, but I know it's been a subject of ongoing conversation, and it is definitely a challenge, and we have to go out there and kind of manually post for detours every time. So even though everybody's very excited every time the teams win another game, it does create a lot of additional work for the team. So, you know, it's definitely an issue we're aware of. It's a real challenge for us and our riders. I can't really tell you much more detail than that.
Neil, did you have any comment on that topic? Maybe you can't hear.
Well, we can get back to you with more details on that.
I did have one other comment on the budget, too. I think it's page 48, is general reserve. Mm-hmm. The 25% of budgeted expenses for continuity of service critical operations, is that going to continue at that amount? Does that need to be adjusted in some way?
That actually is budgeted for, since it's a board policy. Since the budget is increasing, we are budgeting for depositing funds into the general reserve. For this budget, given its increase from the prior year, it would be about $460,000 additional would be deposited in reserve to maintain it at basically a 3 month of operations level.
Thank you. Any other comments on the budget? Ready to move on? What is our next topic? We're on the item 7, the LOTD microtransit policies.
Yeah, I'll turn it over to Courtney for that.
Moving.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have a slide for that?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm kind of confused at this. There's two things about the woodland microtransit in front of me. Which one should I be looking at, and where they're looking?
Apologies. Yeah. So if you brought a different packet, if you only look at, so first we'll start with the staff report, which covers two different assessments, one that's got the City of Woodland logo on it, that's the Woodland Service Plan, and then the other one without us, though, is countywide microtransit call. And Courtney's going to talk about that.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I guess taking a step back, so when I got on board, we were in the process of implementing a new microtransit service for the City of Woodland, and simultaneously while we were doing that, we were also needing to update our microtransit policies from Your Ride to what will be the new brand of Elon service. Part of this is because we're using some new software, RideCo, is the name of the software platform. They will be the ones that will be managing a lot of the booking, ride reservations, and even payment potentially if there are one form that they can use in terms of making sure that riders know when their ride is going to be arriving, when they're going to be dropped off, and then knowing their queue for them when they'll be picked up. So in order to accommodate all of that, we needed to update our policies to reflect the user experience as well as kind of refine some of the things that
may have been a bit more antiquated. So with that, the primer. So now we're going into just some background. So as you know, October 22nd, the OTE board voted for the promotional $1 fare for Knight's Landing. Effective in January 2023, this fare is now $4 with no discounts offered. So why this is brought up is that this has been a huge source of contention for citizens of Knight's Landing in terms of that fare just not being accessible enough for their needs, and given the economic situation of that community, we hear that. And so part of what is reflected in this policy changes is our proposal for fare bill. We've also been directed, based on customer complaints by the board, with that, to be more flexible with some of the offerings that we'll have. That's included in the microtransit policies. And then just like kind of I said earlier, with the Rideco software, this will allow for real-time pickup and tracking, fare collections, and reservations up to 7 days in advance. And so within this, the staff report kind of going over at a high level. So the changes to our GoATD microtransit policies include defining passenger eligibility, passenger identification requirements, passenger reservation policy, pre-boarding policy, hours of service, zone maps, fares, policy for non-service animals, rider cancellations, and the process of explaining that, and then rider reimbursements. And so with that, at a high level.
Sorry, can we skip back? We skipped over the fare piece. Can we go back to the?
Oh, yeah. And so, sorry, I was reading off the staff report, but now going to the slides. Go one more, Heather. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. So the big items, the highlight that I wanted to present to you all before kind of answering some of your questions you had about the broader policy document is related to passenger eligibility. So now, we're doing away with the old process, which is essentially requiring microtransit users to fill out 7 or 8 page document and then send that into our staff or transit where we verify. Eligibility is now being determined through using the Rideco app. So, and this is, and in cases where a person is not able to use the Rideco app, they can still call in, but their information will be logged into the Rideco system. So we'll always be able to know who are the individuals that are requesting trips, as well as kind of their name and email. And then with that, what we're proposing for fares, for one way is that they'll now be $3 instead of the $4. Youth fares are $150, and then senior and disabled fares are also $150. If the group passes are also providing a 50% discount if they're buying passes of 5 to 8, people. And so the other big change we'd say is that now we're allowing for up to 7 days of reserving rides with EDOM, and this is possible through the Rideco system. And how that'll work is essentially if a person knows that, for an appointment or for healthcare and they need to book their trip, they're guaranteed a window with that, with when they request that trip, and they'll be notified the day of, and then they're basically have secured their spot. And so I believe these are the biggest policy changes to cover. A large amount of this document is actually removing previous policies, as I kind of mentioned earlier, in terms of defining the 10 criteria. And then next slide, Evan. And so, yeah, this is kind of what I was saying. These are, at large, all of the changes that were made within the policy document. And I won't reread them again, but I'll go to the next part, which is the maps. Or, let's so before going to the next part, which is specifically the Woodland Microtransit proposal, are there any questions broadly about kind of the policy document itself? Is there any questions you want me to go with?
Can we go back to the microtransit? One more thing. So the passenger eligibility is just for people with disabilities to get the 7 and 8 page document that's being replaced by this?
So that is our ADA policy.
Okay.
That's still separate in terms of how a pack rider would need to go through to make sure that we can approve them the ADA.
This one doesn't require a doctor's signature.
Correct. But previously, just to use microtransit, if you were not an ADA passenger, you still had to submit like 8 pieces of documentation. So that is a big change because now it's just logging into the app, providing your user credentials, and then you can use a survey.
A big part of that was previously for both in Winters or Nice Landing, they actually had to document that they were residents of Nice Landing or Winters to use the service. So we were verifying their like home address and stuff, which is a bit onerous. And don't mean that people who were trying to visit those places, or like for example, if they were going to work, if they worked in, they lived in Woodland and worked in Nice Landing, saying they were technically not eligible. Some people, I don't think we were strictly enforcing that, but that actually was the official policy that we had on the books, is that you had to be a resident of those communities to use the service. So that's a big part of what that eligibility was about.
Thank you.
So is Rider ID a requirement of like I wonder is that has that represented any barriers for folks?
So really the ID is more at the discretion of drivers, and it's just to make sure that passengers know when using the service that you know the student that if the driver asks that they just have that fare ready. So it's more of just a mechanism of accountability, but not necessarily a requirement that every trip that someone takes, they're going to be asked to be shown their ID.
Okay.
Thank you. I guess so two questions. So one regarding the previous residence requirement, and one happy to if that's going away, it's going to be the whole anyone the general public can use it. But also I did actually want to use like I think I've talked about it before, but I did use the Winters microtransit service, and I of course live in Davis, not Winters, and no one ever asked about my residency. So. I'm not sure. So is that a newer thing, or is that like something that's been
since then? It was always the policy from day one, but like I say, I think that we kind of abandoned actually enforcing it because it was completely unwieldy, but it was technically our policy, or it's still technically our policy to pull the book through these things.
Okay. And then my other question also regarding the policy around the winter service before we get into Woodland specifically is that when the microtransit was first started, I had like the Philtrans, the B line that ran between Davis and Vacaville, like through Dixon rather than Winters. That still provided like a fixed route option like along between Davis and Vacaville. But since then, Philtrans, they cut the, or I think it had been fast, and then it got transferred to Philtrans. And then they cut service quite a bit on that line. So now it's like down to just a couple of peak hour trips that actually run between Davis and Vacaville, and all the weekend service was truncated to Dixon. So I'm curious as to how that's impacted with our, so now like that makes microtransit to like the only the microtransit is actually the only transit option to get between Davis and Vacaville, so I'm curious as to how that's impacted the service and what plans are for potentially addressing some of those impacts going forward.
Okay, so let me just make sure I got your question clear. So for the Winters microtransit service, you were curious about making sure that since that is their only current option of transportation, based on the service cuts to Soltrans, how is that affecting the current ridership of the Winters microtransit service?
Yeah, so basically like when before COVID, like there's been fast had operated the line on I-80 from Davis to Dixon to Vacaville, and then Yola Bus had Davis to Winters to Vacaville as a fixed route, and then the Davis to Winters to Vacaville was switched to the Winters microtransit, but still, in theory, especially given the length of especially with the residence requirement for Winters not being enforced, that's something you can theoretically use to get from Davis to Vacaville. But then, I mean, when Philtrans was still operating the fixed route from Davis to Vacaville, that probably would have been like the more practical transit option versus using the Winters-based microtransit. But now that fixed route might not have very little service, fixed route service between Davis and Vacaville. I'm curious as to how that's if there's been an impact on the microtransit, and then if there are plans for addressing that, or what the plans are for Davis to Vacaville service going forward.
So, from what I'm aware of, they can still use Winters service to get to Vacaville for their microtransit service. Impacts would be related to ridership, so if you want specific ridership questions, then I'm sure we could get that for you and then send that in an email.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't be able to tell you off the top of my head what are the ridership impacts if we've had any with, let's say, April service.
Okay. Anecdotally, I can tell you that we do have people that do that, but you can't book a trip from Davis to Vacaville. You have to book a trip from Davis to Winters, and then book another trip from Winters to Vacaville. So we do hear that people are doing it, but, you know, it's obviously it's expensive because you're paying $4 currently for each trip, so that's $16 round trip by the time you add it all up. Not to mention you've got to wait. So it's not ideal. The question of the kind of the full train service, you're right that it is, it's only 4 peak hour trips per day now. I will say that it's something that with the express lanes that Solana was currently building, and then we're building express lanes on the Yolo County side, one of the things that does is it creates a great opportunity to have increased transit service, right? Buses using those express lanes, because now the buses are not sitting in traffic and become a very attractive option, right? So, in fact, I just had a conversation with Daryl Hall at STA today, and we've been talking regularly about the idea of trying to kind of collaborate on some sort of, like, expanded causeway connection that is really going from downtown Sacramento down to the Bay Area, utilizing the kind of express lanes that are going to exist. But I would say that's definitely a few years, more than a few years away at this point. But it would be something that would make a lot of sense as a kind of a DMT reduction strategy associated with the express lane.
And just a comment from some Hickman earlier today, and I saw the Soul Trans, which is used to be only Solana Express. What's the deal with the dual name?
And I don't think it would have been Solana Express because it has been under Fairfield's Dune Transit, and then it got switched to Soul. It's like there's some administrative change where it got switched to Soul Transit, and I think that might have been also. Now, feel free to correct me on that, but I think that's coincided with the service got.
Yeah, right. The Fast is operated by the City of Fairfield, I believe, and then Solana Express is operated by STA. So, whatever. But we should keep moving and talk about the Woodland Micro. There's no other questions on the policy.
Just quickly, what's happening with the concerns in Iceland about the corridor there? Mm-hmm. It's just, that's how it is.
No.
If you didn't report a fee.
You're reducing it down to 3.
And then half off discount for you and seniors.
And really it's our response to acknowledging, you know, based on what was in policy and to be implemented, so the $1 was a promotional fare.
Sure.
And it was always written that it would go up to $4. And so obviously when prices increase, people are going to respond to that. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, we need to make sure that we're charging an adequate level for the type of high quality service they're getting, which is door to door.
Yeah. So you compromise and we'll see how it goes with the committee and with the board.
Yeah.
One question I have about, I'm sorry, were you finished?
I'm done.
Okay, sorry about that. I didn't mean to. But I noticed that, you know, the Winners one does stop at 4:30. Has there been pushback about extending it to a VC 5 or at 30, or is there not an answer to that?
So we have received pushback, I would say. These are the current times that are listed. They can be amended at a different time depending on if we are receiving more comments from the public. And that's something that is, again, kind of an ongoing process, similar to the increase in fares. So this is the times that we have currently are operating on. If there's a response from more of the public that they're saying, hey, we want to have our times increased, and they're reaching out to the board members and you guys, and we'll respond and make sure we're doing the planning and outreach needed, and then make the change.
And we have heard some of that feedback too from my planning residents about wanting the service to start earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is something that's kind of at the board's discretion to extend the hours of operation. I will say one of the big constraints we have is right now, each of those services operates with one driver and one vehicle per day.
Mm-hmm.
If we extend the hours anymore because it's getting old, then we end up having basically double the number of drivers. We'd have to go to 2 drivers, even if we extended the service by half an hour. So there's a little bit of a kind of an economy of scale question because we can't, the way that our union contract works, we can't just kind of add increments of people.
Sure.
So that's one of the limiting factors, but I think it's certainly something that we do hear from staff and would consider.
I mean, the Woodland hours are better.
So is that a good segue to, should we talk about the split line?
Good, Courtney. All right. So continuing on, so planning staff for EOTD over the last about 6 months has been doing a lot of outreach and analysis to get to this point where we can propose to you guys. We have three proposals currently for what we would consider implementing for microtransit service in the city of Woodland. And we'll go through each proposal today as well as kind of the service map that we're looking at being implemented. And then kind of go to, if you have any comments, you can just ask you.
So just sorry, one clarification. So amongst the alternatives, it's sort of like, well, obviously, like, we want the big money one, right? Like, I mean, like, but why? Why would we want not want that? Like,
yeah.
Why would we pick the less?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Part of what we do during our planning and working with City of Woodland staff is kind of being responsive to the financial costs for this increase in service. So. Noting that microtransit is not cheap, you know, compared to fixed routes, you can't just say, well, here's our one proposal, take it. So we need to be mindful that there are going to be needs and constraints based on once people actually see these different types of implementation processes and then take that feedback, see the response from the public, and then know what financial constraints they may have and make a decision. So, yes, we all want the nice, safe, expensive things. But we still have to be considerate of all options of what could be implemented. And so that's why we have three different alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, for the first alternative, it's called the preferred alternative. What you have is Monday through Thursday and operates from 7 to 7, Friday from 7 to 11, Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m., and Sunday from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Obviously, this is providing the most service and also providing more flexibility to provide trips to riders at night if they're going out, a safe opportunity to get home. The number of vehicles that will be operating are 4, and then total hours estimate is about 12,520. What this goes into explaining essentially is for budgetary reasons. So when we were working with Woodland City staff, they wanted to kind of know in relation to total costs, and then with that cost, we're able to give them an hourly breakdown. What would be more important for the public is really the span of time of operation. And then also for the performance, you'll get the best average wait time of roughly 10 to 15 minutes. And then with the estimated ridership figures based on the city map that we provided to RIDECO, what we have is from Monday to Thursday, roughly about 185 to 230 rides. Friday, 225 to 280. Saturday, 100 to 125. And then Sunday, 80 to 110. And so with that, you know, we're more agnostic and responsive to what the members and kind of the public are pushing for with which service they would prefer. And so are there any kind of questions on that before I give you the next alternative?
So it seems like there's, sorry, I have a question. So it seems like there's a couple different toggles you're looking at, both the wait times and the hours. So is it that the second alternative just wait times, and then the third one.
So with the preferred alternative, with the price, you're going to get the shortest estimated average wait time with the highest ridership, with the most span of time that the hours are being operated. And then each subsequent alternative kind of has a reduction in some of those times, either with span of time, the estimated total cost, and then the wait time for the rider, which affects the rider.
So let me rephrase that. The things that we can toggle are the number of vehicles we have in service at any given time, the hours of operation, and then the map, how big is the service area. Those are the three variables that we can play with. The kind of what that, and then the outcome of that is how long is the estimated wait time, and what does the ridership look like. And then so the cost is really a function of how many vehicles, you know, and therefore how many drivers, you know, do we have in in a single day.
Mr. Chairman, estimated cost is $1,076,000. Who pays that? Who covers that cost? The city and the And what
CTV? So that's actually paid through the same mix of funds that we use for everything, which is we have our formula funds from the federal government, our 5307, and then we have the local match requirement on those, which comes from our TDA.
Okay, so it's entirely paid through
our standard. Yeah, through our standard, exactly. Right. Transportation.
The city doesn't contribute to that at all.
No. Okay, should we talk about the two other alternatives and then also the two options we have in terms of the service area?
Okay, yeah. So the next alternative we have is our cost constraint alternative. So hours of service is on Monday through Thursday, 7 to 6, Friday, 7 to 11, Saturday from 9 to 11, and then Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So then the total number of vehicles that I'll be operating, you'll have 3. Estimated hours are 9,087 with an estimated cost of $781,000. Increase in average wait time of 20 to 30 minutes. And then, as you can see, the ridership numbers from Monday through Sunday are a little less than half of the preferred alternative. And then, any questions on that? I think kind of covered the variables that can be changed all the way through each alternative. And so for alternative number 3, this is essentially the preferred alternative slightly, but with a change to the hours of service, as well as a slightly lower estimated cost with a roughly, I would say, it's a slightly higher average wait time. So Monday through Thursday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., Friday, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. each, Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m., Sunday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., we'll have 4 vehicles instead of the 3, slightly higher operation hours with 10,594, with an estimated cost of $910,000, and then with an estimated average wait time of about 15 to 20 minutes. And so between those 3 alternatives, we'll go to the zone maps. And so what we have are 2 area maps that we're proposing as well for the implementation of the Woodland Microtransit Service. Zone Map 1 is the largest service area, and really the trade-off here is between trying to decrease the average wait time. And so between Zone Map 1, it kind of includes more of the industrial area, and then if you toggle Heather, this is Zone Map 2. And you'll see it kind of, they removed that session, which from when we did our estimates with RIDECO had a slightly higher, it dropped the average wait time for passengers taking on trips.
The rationale there being that the industrial area is very low density. It just increases, if we're doing a lot of trips up the industrial area, that means, you know, the vehicles making longer trips can make fewer total trips per hour, right? Whereas if you're in a smaller zone, then it's not making such long trips. So it does kind of, the thought there is because that is the lowest density and least transit-oriented part of Woodland, you really don't have a lot of destinations out there, you make it better for everyone else who's within the kind of the more of the urban core of Woodland. So that's the trade-off, yeah.
So with that more or less concludes kind of the presentation of the service options, the zone area maps, and then the microtransit proposal that we will be presenting to the board next week. In addition to the policy update that we have, that will coincide the release of the microtransit service. And that's the last slide, right, Evan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, do you have any questions on...
Any comments, questions?
So one comment just on the two different options, the options to include versus exclude the industrial area. I guess just one thought that I'd have there is if it is having a significant impact on travel times, that would actually be a sign that there is more significant demand there. Could mean there are a lot more trips going on to and from there, and that.
Not necessarily because of that distance coverage when you're thinking about the whole city of Woodland.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily saying that if there's a higher ridership, we're moving that. It's also just like Autumn saying, if there's not that many trips, but the fact that it is an option, it's going to increase the average time because the area is wider.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Just kind of throwing that out there.
It's not a huge area that you're cutting out. It's
correct.
Yeah. It's like a couple blocks perimeter, right?
It's pretty much everything kind of northeast of I-5.
Yeah, so it's really, I mean, this area is included in both, right? Yeah, so really not out of that. So, okay, well, this is interesting. It seems like a pretty significant, you know, map either way, right? That's my feedback.
Any other comments? Questions?
I guess just one quick question on the different financial situation. So does this mean, like, so the different costs and the money that goes into it, so what it means, like, in a, if you have a, like, static, is this something we'd be anticipating with more of the fiscal cliff type situations later on in terms of the smaller options?
Yeah, so going back to the kind of conversation Leo was talking about where we have, you know, 5 years out, we have a $3.5 million annual shortfall that would need to be made up with basically more TDA funds. That budget assumes the preferred alternative. So you can imagine that if we ended up going with, say, the second alternative, which would cost, you know, $300,000 or a little less, $300,000 less per year, that's $300,000 more of TDA funds that the city of Woodland gets to keep for their public works budget. That makes sense.
Thank you for the clarification.
One thing I'll say is I really like the simplicity of the timing on the preferred alternative. I feel like 7 to 7 for weekdays is just something that would be easy to convey. You know, I think sometimes, like, you know, I feel like the simple messaging about if it's, you know, like, It's a lot of information for people to absorb. I feel like when you're like, it's $2, but tap that, you have, you know, a group, and it's like, you know, it's like there's a lot of information to take in, and it's like everything that can make it feel more simple, I feel like it's going to improve ridership, improve, just, I don't know, just, appreciating that you have to narrow those windows for morning pickups on weekends, theoretically, because, you know, this wouldn't have the demand. But, you know, it would just be so nice to have everything be simple timing that sort of match.
And I'll just throw out one thing, too, that this is, you know, the start. So depending on, you know, once this is rolled out or implemented, we'll be able to take a lot of the data and information to see, okay, if there's more demand and if there's more public interest, and, you know, we'll do some outreach probably, you know, once the service is implemented, just to see how the rider experience and what their feedback is. So just knowing that while this is the initial what we're presenting, you know, things can change.
Yeah.
And we'll be responsible for that too.
Mm-hmm. So cool. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. So when is it starting?
Yeah, so currently we're still waiting on some vehicles, so we're estimating that it'd be around August, hopefully beginning of August, and that's really kind of the big thing for us, is once we have those vehicles, then we'll be able to kind of establish the firm date and then present it, let you know and our board. But right now we're estimating about August. Oh, 2023, I should
say. I mean, yeah, vehicles are a limiting factor, and drivers are a limiting factor as well. You know, Transit is well aware of this, and they're continuing their efforts to hire, but we do not have a sufficient number of drivers at the moment. If we wanted to operate this service tomorrow, we had vehicles, we couldn't. So that's also still a very real concern.
One demand location is east part of Beamer, because you've got the Hope Emergency Shelter up to 100 men and women out of tiny houses. Many of those people don't have vehicles, bicycles, certainly. If they want to get out of town, they walk or ride a bike to Walmart, basically, right now. So.
Yeah, we did meet with them, and we heard that feedback from them as well, that they would like to have access to this service, given that they are literally the very furthest edge of the zone. In our conversations with the City of Woodland, you know, we understand that the City of Woodland does provide an ongoing van, I believe, that the City of Woodland paid for, and they have said to us that they'd like to explore additional options if the Force of Help folks need additional transportation to kind of that they can directly operate, that that would be their preference. That's something that we've heard from the city of Woodland, but definitely open to, you know, your thoughts, because I know you do a lot of volunteer work and are connected with them as well. I'm curious your reaction, if you have a sense of that. What the need may be.
Yeah, and the need currently. Yeah, of course, I hope to have a couple of bands. I think what you're doing is taking them to the Walmart stop at a certain time in the morning if they want to ride back and be there. But that doesn't always work, depending on what they're doing in town or out of town.
So they're actually just dropping off people at the nearest bus stop as opposed to taking them to other locations, I see.
Sometimes they'll take them to Nugget or some specific location, but depends what the demand is. They've got two or three vans.
Interesting. Okay. That's good feedback.
Yeah. Well,
we're done with the topic. Anybody else? Any questions?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for supporting me at the bottom. So we're getting to adjournment.
So I guess my only request on this item would be if the CAC has any kind of preferences or, you know, or any feedback that you would like to share with the board. If the board's considering these alternatives, then we would love to pass that on to
them. Yeah, I would certainly like to suggest that as a member of Woodland Rest, the board, I support the preferred alternative. I think this is the right way to go with the wider time windows and the stronger service. I think, you know, doing it with more gusto will probably result in more interest. Of course, it's always going to ramp it up further, but I think it's really going to be so great for the city's looking, so I'm just so pleased with that option.
Would you like an advisory motion or just?
If the committee is so moved to pass a motion, then I'm sure that that would be
wonderful.
I was going to second, if that is a motion, I'll second that.
Yes, I'll make a motion, but it's going to suggest that we support the preferred alternative.
Okay. Motion by Molly, second by Anna. We need a roll call for this, or just all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Correct.
Aye.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. And if there's anything else, that is for the preferred alternative. Is there anything on the microtransit policy? Not to be pushy, it's always helpful for us to capture if there's any kind of clear direction. You know, we hope to be able to share that with the board.
And I guess specifically to, regarding fares, I think that's a big point because that's been a lot of contention with the $4 increase. So if you have a comment one way or another on the type of fares that we're proposing, that would be helpful as well.
Yeah, so my one question would be on the disability fares. If there's anyone that gets free fares or anyone that qualifies for free fares,
it's just senior and youth discounted fares.
Oh,
it's not for
easy. Okay, yeah. Don't have a discount beyond unless you qualify in for one of those other
programs. Correct.
Correct.
And those two discounts.
And those two discounts.
I think the $3 is probably fair. And you're probably aware that in West Sacramento they have a $3.50 service. You can go anywhere in town for $3.50 each way. So.
Yeah, I mean it is 50%. Roughly of what it would cost to get a ride hail.
They have a, you can't remember what it's called, it's a service where you can call if you're in a hotel or something or phone in the car and you can get somewhere. You pay $3.50, you go anywhere in Woodland one way and then pay the somewhere to get back to where you want to go.
Okay. So I move it. That we support the policy as staff's recommended.
Yeah.
Is that a motion, Paul?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay. Second by Molly. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you for your support.
So now we're looking at adjournment. I was looking at the map or the calendar for July, and July 3rd wouldn't be very good because it's on a Monday with 4th of July and a Tuesday.
Is that pickle pork?
I don't know who to.
I got it. I
will
do that. Let's just stay on the agenda.
I don't know. I didn't see a tournament date, or did I?
I feel like Aaron was discussing that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's the following week.
Yeah, the following week. Yeah. So are we going to Monday the 10th?
Yeah, let's say we don't have it on the agenda. Let's double check.
Yeah.
Okay. We got
invitations,
so I can
find out. Is that in the village? Anyway, you'll let us know. You've been now working.
Yes, we can. Yeah, we can adjourn, let you know. I'm just looking.
It's June 27th.
Oh,
the weekend,
Friday.
Oh,
that makes sense. We
want to
do it before the board meeting.
Yeah,
same thing.
So we're
going. Yeah.
So we're talking June, is that here?
June
27th? June 27th.
All right.
Put that on our calendars, June 27th, 6 p.m. at this location. Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Right.
Andy, do you want to ride back to Vegas?
I'm good, thank you.
You don't need to use the mic for that.
If you want to put your mic in a back, you still be talking to me that way. Don't worry about to make it pop heads and do it back.
I don't think the rain is stopped. So.
Right.